Warning, this podcast contains bad words and stories about drugs and sex and overthrowing the government. Proceed with caution. Okay. Thank you. And now on to our show. Wake up, brother, we got nothing to do. Let's go outside, just me and you, and build a fort. We'll pack a lunch, won't be home till after dark. Then after dinner we can sneak back out. You know that high school girl I've been telling you about? Well, she gets undressed about a quarter to nine, and we can watch her do it from the big old pine next door. She got a room on the second floor. Well, looks like another fucked up day in paradise.
Hey, neighbor, friend, far away. Hello, sister, brother, lost relation. Greetings, spacefarers, crew of the starship Earth Enterprise, astronauts, Asian, African, American, Aboriginal, Article. Stand by for another transmission from somewhere earlier in our sunward swinging. This is the Daughter of Godcast, and I am Dan Kelly, a.k.a. Shri Fuji Split, or something who looks and sounds very much like him, a cosmic crab in his swirling seashell, wearing the stigmata, doing a bang-up job of pretending to be just me, claiming the cosmic Oscar for my role as mere mortal. Just like you. Oh, to be once again speaking, smiling into the future, to entangle myself, dualistic and digitalian. I point devices from the early 21st century in my approximate direction, devices barely better than stone knives and bearskins, for capturing some fraction of my visual and audio radiations. These primitive devices are all we have in the way of time machines in this here and now. One way only. Some shadow of myself travels to the future with a message, a hint about who I might have been, what my ride felt like. Can you recognize me in a future unfathomable? Am I still even slightly human? A vintage model, but forever classic. Easy on the eyes? Aye. Because it's getting hot out here, and I want to be not too hot, and if I take off my shoes, I'll get two benefits. A, I'll have slightly chillier feet, which will be okay because that will take some of the heat out of my body. But B, I'll also be grounding out and getting ions in my body. Ions! Ready to reconstitute 2013, 4 years ago from my lovely locus of the ever-refreshing. I'm writing this bit on April 17th. 2017 in the gray AM, and recording this on April 18th, 2017 in the sunny after morning. Which is more me, the writing or the reading of the writing? Ask the right question and the answer will be obvious. Well, who said that? As far as I know, I did, though probably other sages have too in our 200,000 year history. What I mean by ask the right question is that when confronted with a quandary, a mystery, or dare I say, a problem, thinking about the optimal solution is less helpful than thinking about the most interesting questions. A really fortunate question includes the answer in the asking. Why did I take a decade to make the Daughter of God is a question with an agenda, maybe not worth answering. There are some sneaky presuppositions lurking. For instance, this question asserts that a littleish movie and a decade aren't congruent. They don't match. Please resolve this mismatch, Dan Kelly. If I try to answer this question, I'm going along with an assertion that may not be very interesting, nor useful, nor fun. Even so, the Daughter of Godcast podcast could be seen as an answer to this question. I've craftily retooled the question to intrigue and entice. Stories from the making of Daughter of God, 12 years from script to screen, and how making my movie made me. Pretty sneaky. Which is wordplay. I wasn't made. I bloomed. I'm not assembled, soldered, or baked. I grow. Every decision during Daughter of God or Dog has been about me, the movie and the diversions too. Especially being of service, volunteering, giving of my power and majesty to worthy causes, and then eventually strategic worthy causes. Or what I hallucinated as strategic. What I dearly wished were strategic. Like, for instance, the Michigan Movie Makers, or M3. The first half of 2013 was spent jousting at windmills. In episode 027, I re-co-launched M3. And then, after James baked the trail, I became M3's prime mover. I don't think I would have started M3 by myself, it's just too much work. Now that the organization was launched, I felt an obligation to follow through. I guess I had some issues around unfinished projects. My personal agenda for Michigan Movie Makers was merely to introduce myself to the creative crowd and identify the most fun people to collaborate with. All these Northern Michigan movie makers. Since my movie wasn't done yet, how could I strut my stuff? How could I attract collaborators? Organizing M3 became a proxy for proving my credibility and chutzpah, which almost worked. I did get a few acting gigs. Then mission creep. I began to have some fuzzy notions about what M3 could be. Objectives that sounded good, but really weren't my passion. Such as, since movies brought together so many creative disciplines, maybe Michigan Movie Makers could be an advocacy group for regional artists generally. Movies could bring lots of really interesting jobs to our region, to the state. Maybe M3 could help make that a reality. Maybe M3 could be all things to all people, a chicken in every pot, freedom, justice. The Michigan Movie Makers could have been version 2 of my co-coordinating the Prospect Heights Community Farm, back from episode 020. Except without the compost bins and resentment. Nobody elected me to project manage M3. I didn't have a mandate to unify the cinematic community. We never had a formal membership. I kind of liked blogging and definitely enjoyed getting to know folks. Everyone was very appreciative. A few people jumped aboard and helped, and then fell away. Other key players logged some significant hours. But what exactly was it all about? At least there were no personal protection orders issued. That's a win. At the start of 2013, as the supposed prime mover of this theoretical advocacy group, I felt obligated to address the most important issue facing my imagined tribe: how to save Michigan's film incentives. Asking the wrong question. In 028, the writing was on the wall for Michigan film incentives as early as 2011. They had been savaged by Republicrats, who didn't like the crowd that made movies, even though conservative icons like Clint Eastwood, Charlton Heston, and Ronald Reagan were all in the biz. Well, Reagan and Heston were dead, but still, M3, or more to the point, I, couldn't yet read the writing on the wall. The film incentives at least existed. Perhaps they could be repaired, remediated. Big budget productions might yet enrich Michigan. I researched the incentives and interviewed the fabulous Clover Keys Roy about how we lost IEFX, and then legislators Ray Franz and Howard Walker about their positions on the incentives. Deb Havens of the West Michigan Film and Video Alliance led a workshop to inspire and rally M3. I blogged and blogged. In March, M3 organized a production extravaganza where we interviewed each other about the importance of movie making in Michigan. We did probably 15 interviews and I made some rough cuts. The idea was to flood legislators with excerpts from these interviews to help them get perspectives they certainly weren't hearing. The first salvo was shot by students of the Career Tech Center Film and New Media program and edited by me.
My name is Tyler Reiner.
I'm Bryce Williams.
I'm Tasha Downey.
I'm Zach Krantz.
I'm Billy Brimmer.
I go to Glen Lake High School.
And I go to Benzie Central High School.
I go to Buckley Community School.
New Sutton's Bay High School.
Glen Lake High School.
I don't know what I want to be yet.
I plan on either doing special effects or directing my own movies.
But I like to edit
script writing.
Audio engineer.
I plan on doing lighting.
And take pictures.
I'd also like to be a grip as well.
Either in sound, audio technology, or in cinematography.
Probably directing, visual effects and cinematography.
I hope to be a screenwriter.
I'm a music supervisor.
My ultimate goal is to become a good director.
Writing and working on a TV show.
I really want to do like feature films or like story-based.
because I think those are really cool.
Comedies are like, woo, when there's never really a boring moment to it, and it'd just be like really creative and fun.
More a psychological thriller.
Horror.
Turn things from just ordinary into the really spectacular things that people want to go see.
It's fun making films.
Getting, you know, my idea out there onto a film and being able to actually make it is just fantastic for me.
I've been making movies and videos since I was like 8.
I started making YouTube videos and I really enjoyed that. It just allowed me to express myself.
When I was little, my grandma always took a lot of pictures and she made scrapbooks and then she got me into scrapbooking.
I started out with stop motion and then I started using my mom's little digital camera to make some videos with my friends.
And then when I got older and we got computers and stuff, they had the movie maker like thing, so I played around with that.
Through my entire life, no matter what I've ever been through, I've always gotten it out on paper, written out a script, and then just gone and made a movie and it made everything better.
You're showing the world how you feel and your ideas.
And so I knew I had a love for it. I just didn't think it was possible to get into it.
But what I would probably be doing is like a bun warmer at Wendy's or something equally as lame.
Make it more of a stable career path to go into locally.
Been here my whole life and it would be really great if I could stay here. If the incentives stayed, then I could probably stay here.
So that people will come make films here if we can offer them a better deal than anywhere else.
Because people think if they want to get into film that they have to leave.
It's harder for us to stay where we want to stay in our hometown to make films.
You'd have a lot more films coming in to work and need different people to hire and get those jobs.
More filmmakers would come up here and help out the local economy.
It brings people from other parts of the world to come and see.
Such a beautiful state.
There's a lot of diversity and landscape.
Beautiful places everywhere.
We get snow in the winter.
You got city, you got deserts, you got beaches, you got everything.
Michigan definitely has it all.
It is. I'd like to stay local in Michigan just so I can stay with my family and friends and not move away.
I am going to stay in Michigan. I have a 4-year scholarship to go to any college in Michigan.
I plan to go to NMC for 2 years since I already have a paid for scholarship.
And Western Michigan University, Grand Valley, or go to NMC first.
I'm kind of hoping to go to a trade school so I don't waste time in college and probably study sound production.
I think I plan on traveling, film everywhere. It'd be nice to stay local if I can. But wherever I end up going, if I end up dead in a ditch, I'll be dead in a ditch with a camera in my hand.
Kids are the most insidious influencers. They're so cute! That last guy, Jake, he's well on his way to fame. Along with all this film incentive jostling, M3 also pulled off a micro-movie marathon. I came to my senses in July and eased off on advocacy. But even so, M3 kept up regular meetings featuring the Brothers Siglaski, the students of the Career Tech Center Film and New Media Program, Rich Brower, plus an open studio in support of J. Mark Iden's Fork. Phew! To answer the wrong question, one reason Daughter of God took 12 years was because I kept aspiring to leadership without a clear idea of why. Why was I coordinating yet another community garden? Certainly my movie maker pals were way easier going than many members of the Prospect Heights community farm, red in tooth and claw. This wasn't feisty Brooklyn. This was Northern Michigan after all. I had several justifications for why I was running M3, but the only relevant reason was to expand my network of collaborators, which could have happened by just inviting them to hang out. But to improve conditions for movie makers, to create jobs on big projects I didn't even see myself being a part of, to make Michigan more attractive to Hollywood? Not my passion. Yet, there I was pushing these peripheral agendas, neglecting my passion. We could go all armchair-y, psychologist-y, and posit a fear of success. But at this delicious moment in spring of 2017, here in Dome 2 of the Valley Forge, my take is that maybe because I've got a big brain, wide-ranging curiosity, and zest for life generally, taking on new challenges is just natural. I would just cobble together some wacky justifications for how whatever I was doing fit into a mythic master plan, and away I'd go. I've gradually gotten clearer about what bliss feels like. Many experiences feel good. Applause at the end of a great M3 meeting, screening the work of 30 or so comrades at a micro-movie marathon, writing an especially kooky blog post for a few hundred people to chuckle at. But bliss is more than feeling good. Bliss is feeling me. Feeling the Michigan film incentives would be totally torn down in 2015, and not long after, I would lay down the Michigan movie makers and lean into the sun. Rather than organize movie makers, I would be a movie maker, full-time. Meanwhile, my secret top-drawer Indian rotoscopers, Eshin and Risha, were steadily cranking out results. I don't have to explain rotoscoping anymore, do I? So in spite of my part-time tilting at windmills, Dog was not languishing. Hardly. All the contractor and task logistics deployed in 2012 were fully functional through 2013. Vroom, 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 vroom. To expand my credibility and cash flow, I tried offering an editorial workshop through Northwestern Michigan College at the start of the year, but I only got half the attendance I needed to break even, so I canceled. This is still a brilliant idea and worth revisiting after I've collected a few pommes de terre. In May, for my 50th birthday, I threw myself one of the best surprise parties ever on Alberta Beach. A dancing, delirious night of bonfire singing, debauchery, and lit frisbees until dawn. I ate a way too powerful brownie, but was mostly there for most of the time. So many excellent friends showed up and celebrated this crazy little thing called love. I gotta be cool, relax, get in, get on my truck, stick a backseat, a hitchhike, take a long ride, I'm a motorbike, cause I'm ready. A crazy little thing called love. Crazy little thing called love, yeah, crazy little thing called love. Oh, crazy little thing called love. And let's not forget our base of operations, the artist house. In June, I started repairing and refinishing the red oak floors. I wanted to find help with sanding, but I couldn't. After renting the big machines, I eventually ended up finishing with dual hand sanders. I didn't lay down oil until August, which meant that most of the house was offline for the entire summer. I laid down plastic when the Allegro clan showed up. There's like seven of them. Ann, Gary, and A to B visited while I was brushing on the oil. Kitchen infrastructure was relocated to the patio, and we lived mostly outside, which was actually pretty fun. Ben Woody was working for me again that summer, and we had to access the computers by climbing through a window. What a wonderful, annoying train wreck. But the floors turned out so beautiful. Here's a little story from the Deep Archive. Emissaries from the Stars. The Deep Archive, September 4th, 2013.
I am Amber.
And I am Braithwaite.
We are emissaries from the Stars.
Salve, emissaries. Welcome.
Are you not surprised to see us?
On the contrary, I've been expecting you.
Indeed, how so?
Well, lately I've gone mad, and so it was inevitable that you or something like you should manifest.
How do you know you've gone mad?
The others of my species no longer understand my thoughts and feelings. I am unable to establish basic rapport. Ergo, I am no longer sane.
So you believe us to be a lie you are telling yourself?
I do.
This a problem is, for we are quite real, and have made contact with you for a vital purpose.
We require action from you.
I have no problem acting in whatever direction you give, for that is the nature of insanity, to strive against the consensual reality and behave in a singular manner, following the instructions of disembodied voices.
You can clearly see our bodies.
Yes, as I can hear your voices, and neither of these perceptions bodes well for my sanity. Yet, I am perfectly willing to accept this state of affairs. What else can I do?
Your attitude is somewhat unsettling. We certainly hope to secure your cooperation. But your rationale,
or lack thereof,
for moving forward is not ideal.
It's of little consequence, however. We know we are real.
Of course you do.
And though you doubt the veracity of your perception now, you will know too, eventually. At that time, you may experience a slight shock.
But by then, shocks will not be unfamiliar to you.
So there will be pain involved?
Pain of the sort you seek, yes. Come now. You know what we mean.
You are isolated from your fellow beings, are you not? A result of your madness, your loss of consensual reality, or so you say. Isn't it possible that you perceive more than your fellow beings? Could your separation be the result of an enhancement?
This is to be expected. Now the apparitions tell me I'm better than everyone else. I'm special, and therefore
unrestricted by conventional mores and accepted ideas.
Unique.
Superlative.
It's why we've come to recruit you.
This is so banal. It's just what I'd expect to experience in my first throes of madness. It's textbook megalomaniacal bullshit.
Well, you've agreed to follow our guidance.
In for a penny.
In for a pound.
And won't you be surprised when you find out that you aren't nuts?
But for now, believe what you wish.
The next chapter will be the same, in any case.
Okay, so back to the pain part.
Joseph Campbell said, love is the pain of being fully alive.
Doesn't adventure involve pain?
So, does this involve falling in love?
Not directly, but perhaps.
We're certainly not setting that up for you.
No, there's no time.
If you find falling in love efficacious, that's your call.
In achieving the work.
Which is what exactly? What do you require?
There is a vast universe.
Chock full of consciousness, too complex for you to even comprehend at this stage. They are as gods to you.
And some not so nice gods.
Some downright nasty.
Think Lovecraft.
And some wouldn't even notice you at all, even after they've crushed your planet.
You could say by accident.
There's a huge spectrum of divinity.
For lack of a better word.
And your people are at the low end.
Decidedly.
Of the spectrum.
But.
And here's the good part.
Something needs doing.
That only a human can do.
One human in particular.
You.
We'd like you to do it. And there's a boon at the finish.
Typical hero's journey.
And you get to wear a cape.
More like a hoodie.
A hoodie cape.
It's purple.
I'm in. You've tuned to the Daughter of Godcast, episode 034, Question. A major theme of 2013 put to bed. Next week, we might add a flourish or three, close out this year, or whip pan to a tangential topic. All depends on what I've eaten for dinner the night before.
And I'm a motorbike, cause I'm ready. Crazy little thing called love. Crazy little thing called love, yeah. Crazy little thing called love, yeah. Crazy little thing called love. Crazy little thing called love. Crazy little thing called love, yeah. Crazy little thing called love. Crazy little thing called love.
Oh my god, I've got to kiss myself. Enough time goes by, and this brother forgets what a badass he's been. 2013 was a year of badassery. I definitely showed those windmills.